When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
Look at us. We look like suburban dads. Yeah. We look like we have some.
I just dropped Jimmy off at the soccer game.
Oh man, I love this show with you. It's like my favorite bullshit we get to do. So let's get into the rest of the set review. Our first card we're going to talk about here is Oko the Ringleader. Mm-hmm. It is a planeswalker. That has three loyalty and costs two generic, a green and a blue. They seem to have learned their lesson from the last Oko. Has a static ability that says at the beginning of combat on your turn, Oko the Ringleader becomes a copy of up to one target creature you control until end of turn, except he has hexproof. And has a plus one ability that says draw two cards. If you've committed a crime this turn, discard a card. Otherwise, discard two cards. Minus one. Says create a 3/3 green elk creature token and a minus five that says for each other non-land permanent you control, create a token that's a copy of that permanent. So it's not super special, right? But I do think the ability for it to be like, especially in like lower color decks, the ability to like copy your best creature, and be able to give you passive value and also be like a creature copy when you need it to be, I think is interesting, right? I don't know that it necessarily is like quite up to snuff for most things, but it's like something I want to point out because I think it's like at minimum an interesting space for a planeswalker to be in. You know what? It's like we usually think of like white and Gideon for doing these types of effects. Mm. And it's interesting to see it in blue green, right?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. It's like the effects aren't huge.
The big upside is the like pseudo clone ability, right?
Yeah. So like worst case scenario, like you play it, make an elk, make a copy of a creature that's good, right?
Right.
Can't stress enough. ETBs are like a really big thing you want from your clones, right? So that's a little Oko Taco for me personally.
Don't you mean Oko Taco? Listen, we're wearing the dad shirts. I gotta lean into it.
You gotta pull up the dad jokes.
I would do it anyway, but I'm leaning into it right now.
I'm saying Noko to Oko.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know that this card is anything, but it looks cool. Has a different ability that I think is at least an ability that I feel like CEDH is like kind of interested in to some degree. So I'm curious to see what it can do. The one deck that I do think it'd be like mildly interesting in is like a like I don't know what you would do with it in Sisse, but like in Sisse particularly, I'm like that seems like it could do something. I don't know what, but
I don't think it does.
You can like do it with Sisse and do stuff with it. I don't fucking know. Listen, I'm just the ideas guy, right? Like I'm the big picture conceptualization person. Yeah. You're the nuts and bolts person.
Yeah. Hey, this legendary permanent could go in the legendary deck and this is my time to go. Probably not.
I'm the Steve Jobs. You're the Woz. You're the Woz.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know who Wozniak is?
No.
He was the guy who actually did all of the important stuff for Apple.
I see.
You know. Moving on to the creature section here, we've got a card that is not a commander, but it could be, is mm-hmm. Tiny Bones the Pickpocket. It is a 1/1 skeleton rogue that costs a black and has death touch and says whenever Tiny Bones the Pickpocket deals combat damage to a player, you may cast target non-land permanent card from that player's graveyard and mana of any type can be spent to cast that card. So immediate comparison to an extent is it's like in the same vein of card as like a Ragavan, right? Like it is doing similar things.
Yeah, for sure. Raggy obviously better in a lot of ways.
By like every conceivable metric, right?
Yeah. Although one thing I will say is where you see the opposites occur is that like Tiny Bones is infinitely better as the game goes longer.
Yes.
Whereas Ragavan gets steadily worse as the game goes longer, right? Like I've seen so many Ragavans unable to connect, but no one's really going to be blocking a Tiny Bones.
Yeah. Like the fact that it has death touch is what makes it like playable. If it didn't have death touch, I wouldn't even be talking about it. The fact that it has death touch means that it actually can connect.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I do like that. I don't love that you can't cast instant or sorceries, right? But like, the fact that you can be like, cool, I'm going to pop you and threaten to cast your docks out of the yard and stuff like that. Or like your fish or you know, stuff like that's kind of cool. I could see some Sisay list experimenting with it. It being a 1/1 in a Bowmasters format's not the most exciting thing for me, unfortunately. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I don't like it, you know?
Yeah. It's a card that I think like, I feel like I would be willing to play alongside Ragavan in a lot of decks.
Sure.
I don't know.
I think like Mardu Timna probably could also.
Yeah, it definitely feels really good in a Timna deck. Mm-hmm. Even in like Malcolm Timna to some extent, like I think this feels fine just because of the fact that you have the ability to generate mana, you draw some cards, get more value out of the graveyard. Like,
you know, one thing I'm always thinking too is that like every time I see a new evasive rogue, I'm like, are we finally at the point where Anawan is playable? are we finally there? We've gotten literally so many good rogues in the past year and a half. It's like it's gotten like exponentially better than it was when I first submitted the concept 100%. Of that deck. But I still don't know if it's playable.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think this is cool. I don't know if this is quite a staple, but I think it is. It's a card I'll be trying in Tivit at minimum because of the fact that like I feel like if I can get a Ragavan-esque card in Tivit that it's worth at least exploring. Mm-hmm. And I think at minimum getting another one drop that you can get off of like a Ranger Captain in that deck is pretty solid. Yeah. So overall, I think it's like fine. But I do like the cool, like the things this opens up.
Yeah.
Is really cool.
Cool. Yeah. No, I like it too. I think it's like, it's going to be a weirdy, right? Yeah. Like people like it. It's strong in the sense that like it does something very powerful in nature, right? You like get recursion out of your opponent's yards. It relies on your opponents, which is always like anytime I see a card like that, I wince pretty hard, right? Mm-hmm. Like unlike Ragavan, which always gets you a treasure, right? It doesn't have that thing that it guarantees doing, right? But unlike a blind flip, it also can guarantee like I'm only gonna be hitting the players who have stuff in their yards that I want to cast.
Right. Yeah. Next card on our list is our good friend Nathan Stoyer. it is Duelist of the Mind. It is a colorless and a blue human advisor creature that has power toughness X3 and flying and vigilance. And it says Duelist of the Mind's power is equal to the number of cards you've drawn this turn. Whenever you commit a crime, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card, and this ability triggers only once each turn. So this is not like amazing, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's like a pretty solid value engine. I will say that I do think in like blue Timna decks, definitely feels super good. Because it's a it's an evasive creature for it, right? That also is at minimum a 1/3 on your turn.
Is dealing damage committing a crime? I don't think so.
But
it feels like a real big miss on the definition of crime, right?
Yeah. Let me double check. Yeah. Whenever you cast a spell, activate an ability, or put a triggered ability on the stack that targets one or more opponents, a spell or ability an opponent controls, a permanent an opponent controls, or a card in an opponent's graveyard.
That's that feels like a very
I agree.
But hitting a player is not a crime. Like what?
Yeah. But yeah. With that being said, it at minimum is a card draw outlet for Timna, or a card draw like piece that goes along with it, and also is a solid blocker as a X3 that is vigilant. I don't know that I love this card, but it is now kind of entering. We're getting this like solid rotation of like two mana blue, like. Does a thing cards, right? The one thing that I do think is interesting is like in a counter war, if you mental misstep somebody's card, right? Like it turns into a rummage, right?
Like a Baral kind of. Yeah.
So I do think it's like Baral that has like some wider implications, which I think is kind of interesting.
Is it in your opinion, do you think this is better or worse than Ledger Shredder?
That's a good question.
It's very similar, right?
Like, it's very similar to Ledger Shredder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the big difference is,
I think Shredder is the better clock by a long
time. I think it's the better clock. The other thing too is it can trigger multiple times a turn, whereas this can only trigger once a turn. Which I do think is like worth noting.
Relevant, yeah. I also think like Shredder will trigger more often because our opponents are doing stuff, as opposed to this is like only when we actively interact with the game.
I think it depends on what the type of deck is that you're playing, honestly.
Very valid.
I feel like an Azorius deck likes this more than they like Ledger Shredder. But a like Esper deck likes Ledger Shredder more than this, generally. Because like at least Esper has the... I'm talking broad strokes, right? But like an Esper deck at minimum has like access to like some form of reanimation. So like it is much more looking to do that in a more regular fashion. Whereas this is more just like passive card draw. You know what I mean? For like rewarding you for doing things you want to be doing.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree, but I see what your point is.
Yeah, I don't even know if that is a good point or not, but it's where it my brain goes
90% of the time, unfortunately. IMHO.
I don't disagree with you, but I think it's an interesting card. Also, it's Nathan, and I have to, you know,
shout out the homie.
Point out that the homie is on a Magic card, which is pretty fucking cool. Yeah. So congratulations, Nate, world champion. Fucking get it, dude. Next card on our list is Generous Plunderer. This is a 2/2 human rogue that costs a generic and a red and has menace. It says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may create a treasure token. When you do, target opponent creates a tapped treasure token. Whenever Generous Plunderer attacks, it deals damage to defending player equal to the number of artifacts they control. Noticeably, this commits a crime on your upkeep, which is interesting. What are your thoughts on this generally? I
don't know. I like feel like I squint a lot when I look at this card. Same. I'm like, it's on paper, it makes sense, right? Like you probably play it like in Magda, right?
For sure.
But like, I hate giving my opponents resources.
I do too. It is eased by the fact that it enters tapped, which I do think is interesting.
Absolutely. And like at minimum dealing one damage to somebody is not fantastic, but like maximum you're probably dealing like three or four to a player who could use a good whopping. So like that's
That has meta, so it's like pretty likely to hit too.
Yeah. I don't hate it. I just don't know where it goes. And that's not like a criticism of it. That's more so just like a, I think it might have some utility. I just don't know where.
You
know?
I think in a deck where you are like, my Coke got a little
bit of burps.
Yeah. Some Cokey burps. I think the fact that it like commits a crime on upkeep, so you don't have to do more to do that to trigger those abilities, I think is relevant.
Crime committing effects are actually going to ever find their way in CEDH.
They might. I don't know that they, there's nothing that immediately jumps out at me, but the way that they've templated a lot of this stuff, I think it's not going to be exclusive to the set.
Yeah. Okay. You think crime committing will be more universal?
Well, like for example, like the outlaw, like specifying that stuff is like outlaws.
Yeah.
Is like, it's similar. It like immediately brings to mind like historic as like a card type. Right, a category. And so that's why my like initial thought is like Spree, I think, is probably going to be just the set, right?
It's fancy kicker, yeah.
Exactly. But committing a crime and outlaws are, and also the mounts are things that I think are likely to be reoccurring mechanics.
Yeah. Mounts feels pretty like transmittable, right? Like you can ride a dragon, you can ride a horse, you can ride a donkey, you can ride the three-headed monster, right? Like that's a
if you can ride a wrench, you can ride a ball.
Yeah.
Mount. What'd you say?
So I cast dodgeball. It has mount.
It's one of those things where it's like I don't. There's nothing immediately that like jumps out to me, but like you said, like on paper, it has some it factor to it, right? Yeah, like you can see a world where it is good.
This is one of those times where, like, I want to draw the distinction of us being like, yeah, this is bad. This is not that. This is, it's good. Just where is the question?
Like, where is the home for this?
Right. Because we've had cards like that before that it's like, they end up being busted like 4 months later, right? But, like, it takes time, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is one of those cards that I'm like, it's good.
There's clearly power in this card, right? Yeah. It's just not immediately obvious where it fits.
Agreed.
But card's cool. Next card on our list is Magebane Lizard. It is a 1/4 lizard that costs a generic and a red and says whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Magebane Lizard deals damage to that player equal to the number of non-creature spells they've cast this turn.
This is what I've always wanted in red. I love this card. This is sick.
This is so like cool. The best like burn mechanic we've seen in like a hot minute for like Commander, I believe.
Yeah, I mean they've been doing a pretty good job. You know, I want to take away things from like Vengeal Tracker and stuff like that, right? Like they've had a couple cards come out and like O'Hare Ashenyale. So like they're definitely making more of these, right? Like we keep talking about how there's more and more, and like this one being on a fucking 1/4 body for only 2 mana, like this just makes me think like we're getting closer and closer to the critical mass of these effects that don't suck. That we're like,
and this is something we talk about on this channel like a lot. It's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of like Eidolon of Rhetoric, or no, Eidolon of the Great Revel in like a way.
Yeah, Revel, right.
Which I think is interesting. I do think the fact that it's a 1/4 versus like a 2/2 is huge.
I agree. I think it's meta. We play Lightning Bolt. People play a Braid. Like it's 1/4 toughness, as we've found out through this format, is huge.
That's what makes. That's what makes like Dauntless Dismantler like good, right? Is the fact that Dauntless Dismantler is fucking hard to get off the board. That is, these types of effects need to be hard to get off the board. And so I like seeing this again, not a card that is like I see and go
instantly.
Immediately this goes in this, right? But it is clearly has some sauce.
I think at some point I'm just going to build this Solfim deck and like see if like this is actually a real thing I can do.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I gotta be honest, there have been some mono red decks I've seen pop up recently, mm-hmm. where I've gone, shit, that looks cool as hell.
Red's kind of better. It's like red used to be kind of a joke in Commander, but that's like now it's not. It is really not.
Well, I mean, like really even the what's the red Praetor? I'm forgetting all of a sudden.
Urabrask?
Yeah, even the like flip Urabrask deck that I've seen play. Yeah. It's like cool as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like it's not like. It looks you dead in the eyes when it does what it does. Like it's not hiding anything, but like it's cool. And like mm-hmm. I've lost to it a couple times and it's just like, wow, this is like neat. So it's cool to see this kind of stuff coming around. Next card on our list is, man, probably my favorite card in the set, I think.
Okay.
It's Aven Interrupter. It is a 2/2 bird rogue that costs a generic. What?
It doesn't interrupt you.
Oh. it costs a generic white and a white and has flash, flying, and when Aven Interrupter enters the battlefield, exile target spell. It becomes plotted, which means its owner may cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost. And then it says spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 more to cast. I'm super excited about this card from the standpoint of it is the type of card that like control players everywhere saw and were like got hyped about immediately because it's very obviously good. It's mm-hmm. better spell queller in a way. For CDH, I think it's a better spell queller. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think that's what makes me really excited about it. And I think that's why it's my favorite card in the set. Because again, it plays along card, like the type of things that I generally enjoy doing.
Yeah.
I this is another card where I look at Tivit and I'm like, this definitely feels like something I would like to play in Tivit. I have no fucking idea what I would cut for it. But like, I think this might be another card. Like, again, like I've talked about this before. Shieldred's like that card where I'm like, anytime I want to test something, I'm like, all right, Shieldred.
Yeah,
this is if it's not better than Shieldred, it doesn't get played. And so I think it'll be interesting. I think this in general, though, for white X decks is a huge get. It's awesome.
Yeah, I think the stacks got a little bit of a facelift in this set. I don't think it's enough to like fully change the way we see the format, right? But like between this and a couple other cards we're going to mention later on, I think it got a few pieces that make it a little more viable. And that's kind of what we need just to keep doing that. Someone literally asked me, what is the bring stacks back? Right. And I was like, all right, we need this and this other thing and a few more of these. And like getting a Boros Rule of Law doesn't hurt. Getting a flash spell that's a counter spell doesn't hurt. Right. Like we're starting to get things. This is cool. Also, Incidental Breach Hate is not bad either.
Also, the other thing that I love about this and I think is really worth noting and why I like it more than Spell. Well, I mean, it's not that I believe Spell Queller has a wording that I don't like. And I just want to double check that I am correct in that. No, this also works the same way where they both exile spells. So it is important to note that because of the fact that this does still counter effectively uncounterable spells. And so that is another reason why I like this in control decks, because of the fact that it does in a sense the mind break trap shtick, but the fact that it doesn't have that 4 CMC or less rider on it makes it just so much more playable. And I think it's really worth noting.
Spell color, like if you There's a bunch of really weird stuff with Spell Queller about like the timing recast. Like if you can like kill a Spell Queller to get back a counter spell that got Spell Quellered and then you get screwed over by that, right? Whereas at this point it's like, yeah, you can if you counter a counter spell with this, it gets plotted and can't be cast at sorcery speed.
Yep. It just straight counter spells, which is really cool. But yeah, I am interested about this. I'm excited about it. Again, I don't know that it is necessarily going to make the cut in everything, but I think at minimum, like Timna control decks are interested in this. Having a flyer that also was a counter spell and a passive hate piece. Good shit. Next card on our list is pretty interesting. I got to preview this card with the Commander RC. This is Karavek the Punisher. It is a 3/3 human warlock that costs a generic, a black, and a black, and says whenever you commit a crime, exile up to one target black card from your graveyard and copy it. You may cast the copy. If you do, you lose 2 life. So it's very straightforwardly, obviously powerful to a degree, right? I see this as, like, there's obviously direct comparisons to be made with, like, Yogg's Will and Underworld Breach, right, to some extent. I personally think this is, like very clearly and obviously worse than Breach. I think it's also just... I don't know how playable it is, but it is at base value somewhat of a Yogg's Will, like a worse Yogg's Will.
I don't really feel like those are apt comparisons per se, right? Because like,
sure,
you have to if Yogg's Will required you to cast a removal spell every single time that you cast it, that would be a little bit worse. I don't think the card's bad, but I think maybe not the most accurate comparison. I definitely think it's a good grind card.
Yeah, right?
It allows you to like have that kind of recursion.
It's like in the family of those types of effects, because of the templating, the way that it works. It is very similar to Yogg's Will, but again, what you bring up is very true. Like, it is not like the fact that you have to commit a crime, you have to target something in your opponents in order for it to trigger, is like obviously what sets it way back. But like, I think it's at least worth noting. Because like it could be a grind value engine, right? Like, what are your thoughts as far as that goes overall?
It's much better with the grindy engine part of it, right? I think it's just got that weird place of like, okay, so you can really only play this in like 2 color at max decks, right? Because you really only care about black cards in the yard, so you want that sort of layer of like redundancy with it that it's actually going to like have impact over and over again, right? You want a decent amount of removal or at least like interactions, like blue black can technically play it too, right? But then you may cast the copy, so
it still has timing restrictions as the big downside.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna ask about that. Which makes it a little bit worse, but like, you know, it's like a weird snapcaster repeatedly in like the mirror, which is kind of interesting.
Again, like, I this is another card where it's like it clearly is powerful, but I don't know where or how.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100% agreed on that.
And again, like, I think the condition of black.
Also, if you have a commander that can commit crimes passively a lot, that helps a ton, right? Well,
and that's one of the things, or care, like. Like, I think this is where like Generous Plunderer, like, I think it like combo, like, that's where I like Plunderer in that regard, where I think somewhere there is a crimes deck to some degree where it's just like it passively doing these things and getting value off of it. And so I don't know where, maybe I need to look at these cards deeper, but it feels like there is something there. I can tell you what's not there, though, is our next card, which is Cabal Profiteering Mayor. It is a 2/4.
I don't know why you hate this card so much.
Card's ass, dude. It's a 2/4 human advisor that costs a generic, a white, and a black. It says whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your opponent's control, for each of them, create a tap token that's a copy of it. This ability triggers only once each turn. Whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
So you don't think like your opponents can only play Dockside when they know they can win the game is worth it?
What do you mean?
Because you basically end up in a scenario where you go like, okay, this is out, right? Your opponent plays a Dockside. They sure. make like six treasures. You get to basically say like, okay, cool. Six tap treasures for me. I'm going to be able to, like, if you can't win this turn, I'm going to go to my turn and have your resources that you just gave me for free, right? Like, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but here's the other part of that too, right? It mm-hmm. makes Dockside loops infinitely easier for them then, because mm-hmm. they have now effectively doubled their Dockside count, right?
Well, that's what I meant with, like, but if you can't win now, right? Like,
but I think it makes winning now easier.
Yeah.
Because let's say there's only three artifacts out that your opponents have. Mm-hmm. I play this. Now there's six if this is out. And so even if before I cast it, I can't loop, because of this card, I can. And so I think this is going, my intuition says that this is going to lead to more of those scenarios than it's going to lead to the, if you can't win now, I'm going to get it. Mm-hmm. Like, that is my intuition of, it's just going to create more of those scenarios.
Sure. Yeah, I can get behind that for sure. Like, I think it's a fascinating idea. I would love to see this with like someone build this with like an Amulet of Vigor.
Yeah.
In their deck, right? Like, just to be like, all right, yeah, like let's
fucking go, baby.
Right, yeah. You know, because then you could do interesting things like blinking it and like stuff like that in case they go to make more tokens or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I do think there's
some funny stuff with like Forbidden Orchard, way it like works with Forbidden Orchard, but like I think that's kind of goofy.
You get
a 1/1, I get a 1/1.
Right. I think the design space is really fascinating. I don't know that it's like busted, right? And I do like that the second ability isn't restricted, because that's the one you're hopefully going to be killing people with, right? If you use it. But we're also talking about this in the 99 too, right? Like, I don't know that I like love it per se, but I would be interested in testing it, right? Just as like, just as like an anti-Dockside piece or kind of like an equivalent, right? Just like, as you mentioned,
I guess my thought is that we have just so many already existing good anti-Dockside pieces, and I don't feel like
100% correct.
And I just don't know, like, I feel like the situations where this is just going to be a Dockside doubler effectively, as opposed to a Dockside restrictor, is more likely than, I'm trying to word this well and I'm not, but I feel like there are going to be more circumstances where it's going to double your opponent's Docksides than in cases where it restricts them. That's a coherent thought.
Very open to that concept of what you're saying.
I'm also very open to being wrong about this, but my reading of this card and my intuition says that there are instances where this is just going to be not great. But I don't know. I also like Duelist, or what is it? Duelist of the Mind. So what the fuck do I know?
I will also say, what was I gonna say? It was about this card. I don't remember. Okay.
It's a human. Yeah. I don't know if that's relevant or not, but
it's a Winota card. It's a Winota
card. Next card on our list, excuse me, is Visage Bandit. It is a 2/2 shapeshifter rogue that costs 3 generic and a blue and has plot, 2 generic and a blue. And so, again, reminder, plotting cards, you may pay 2 generic and a blue and exile this card from your hand, and you can cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost, but you can only play it as a sorcery. Mm-hmm. And it says you may have Visage Bandit enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature you control, except it's a shapeshifter rogue in addition to its other types. So new clone effect. Yay.
So the reason I'm specifically asked Cal to put this on the list is because there's a fun mini game I like to play every set called Did We Get More Gyruda Clones? and for several sets in a row now, we have gotten more Gyruda clones, right? And
we sure have.
Currently operates under the idea that you don't necessarily need to overcommit to the clone plan, right? But we are eventually going to hit a critical mass of clones where it is just very likely you're going to mill the majority of your deck over, right? That and your opponent's playing clones too, right? We have to consider that in mind as well, right? So there does become a certain point in the list where it is just like, okay, here's all of my ramp pieces and all of my clones, and I'm gonna like almost guarantee that I mill everyone's entire deck, you know?
Yeah.
So just food for thought. It's nothing Garuda. Like, you know, super busto, right? But it's at least an interesting experiment. And this is like literally just me saying, every set I look out for these things. Maybe you can too. Have fun with it.
Next card on the list, Crackling Spellslinger, is a 2/2 human wizard that costs 3 generic and 2 red and has flash and says when Crackling Spellslinger enters the battlefield, if you cast it, the next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn has storm. Yeah, it's a senator. it has storm. So we were talking about this a little bit pre-show. Mm-hmm. As a card that has the DNA of a good card,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But might just be a bit too expensive.
Yeah.
To really be,
you're gonna see it in like weird lower tier decks, right? Like not in necessarily like bad decks, right? But like what, like just decks that are quirkier, right? Like you're gonna mm-hmm. see it in things. I think like is it storm stuff?
Is it?
I think you're gonna see it in like mono red a lot, right? Like I think like Rionya is like a really interesting place for this, because even if you like flash it in on end step, right, because it's the next one you cast this turn, right, it's like, oh okay, well I can't actually afford to do that, but like end step I'll flash it in, play my commander, play like 2 instances of sorceries, make like 4 copies of it that has like storm.
Well, it does have to be this turn, right? So
that's what I'm saying with Rionya,
right? Oh okay. Well, right, no, like, it does have the
if you cast it,
you do have to cast it.
That's so much worse.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's like if it was just, this is the other thing is so here's the 2 ways this card could be broken, and I guarantee you tested them both ways. Is you either make it 1 less mana and it's significantly more playable, or you take the if you cast it part out.
Yeah.
Either one makes this card significantly better, and I'm pretty sure they did the right thing by keeping both.
Yeah. I just think it's cool.
It is cool.
I don't know. It's probably not going to see play anywhere, but I don't know. I love the idea of it doing so.
Like I said, it has the DNA of a card that should be good, but I think has enough restrictive text on it that keeps it from being quite that.
Yeah.
Next, this is our last creature on the set. This is going to be in a lot of black decks. This is Harvester of Misery. It is a 5/4 spirit that costs 3 generic and 2 black with menace, and says when Harvester of Misery enters the battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. Also has a channel ability where you can, for a color, a generic and a black, discard this card and target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. Mm-hmm. Isn't technically called channel, but it is a channel ability that is literally channel.
It is a channel ability. Channel has proven itself to be insanely powerful over the past few months. And by that, I mean like year plus.
The fact that this just fucks over Grand Abolisher without casting spells is fucking nuts.
That's pretty nice. That's actually very nice. Black having an answer to a Grand Abolisher is actually very powerful.
That also can do it on their turn, right? So it's
so you did mention that it will be played in like many decks. And I do agree. Black always has that contradiction of like mana value low for ad nauseam, you know, not really want to playing a 5-drop as a removal spell, right? And you're going to see that, I think, with this card. But like the Yuriko decks especially are going to go crazy over this card, I think. Right. I think any sort of black mid-range stuff, right? Any sort of like five color Nozzle stuff.
Well, this
right?
is so my thought for this yeah. is testing this in the spot of Languish and Tivit.
Interesting.
Where it's like a more flexible Languish where it doesn't quite kill necessarily everything,
yeah.
but it's going to kill most of the annoying mm-hmm. stuff.
That's also really fascinating in reanimator style decks too, mm-hmm. right? Like if you have like a Kenrith or whatever, just being able to be like, cool, channel this and then activate Kenrith, bring it back to the battlefield.
Yeah.
Like if I need to cast or I need to kill like an X4 or something like that.
This feels like it's solid in like most Kenrith decks, right? Like,
yeah. I also really like it in, there's the super fringe commander that people play every once in a while. The Esper one. Whenever a thing goes in, you advance in the dungeon, then you complete a dungeon.
I know what you're talking about, but right? I can't think of the name of it.
Sephiroth, right?
Sephiroth, yep.
Yeah. Obviously stupid in that deck. But yeah, I think there's a lot of like really cool stuff you can do with this card for sure.
Yeah. I think this is probably pretty close. Mana value is
the only thing keeping it out of any decks, I think.
Yeah, I think this is maybe the closest to an obvious staple that we're getting in the set.
Mm.
Honestly, like I think this like is pretty straight.
I think there's one more that's very clearly better than this, but yeah, this is probably number two.
Yeah, I think this is like very obviously going to go into a lot of decks personally. Yeah. Next card on the list is a card you and I have been excited about.
Yeah, this is the card I was referring to literally 2 seconds ago.
Yeah. Well, the reason I think the other one is more of a we'll get into it. Right. Next card on our list is Molten Duplication. It is a generic and a red sorcery that says create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. Gains haste until end of turn. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. Twin Flame? Twin Flame? Is that the right one? Twin Flame.
Yep.
Yeah, new mm-hmm. Twin Flame. That is...
We're not even going to talk about how much of a struggle that was for you.
I couldn't remember if it was Twin Flame or what the other one was, because I couldn't remember if it was the 3-mana one, but the 3-mana one's instant, isn't it?
Yeah, the 3-mana one is not instant. It can target your opponent's stuff, which...
Oh, that's better. Fucking okay. Stupid. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. This card's sick. I will say the reason I think that Harvester is a more like straightforwardly obvious staple is because I think that like removal effects like that are never going out of style, right? Like especially
a very control player opinion.
Fair. But I mean, honestly, if it didn't have the channel ability, I would probably agree with you. I think the channel ability though is what makes it good, because
channel ability is the thing that makes it even slightly playable. Yeah.
It like the fact that we now have a very solid answer to a Grand Abolisher. Yeah. It like in black is just so good. You don't have to play fucking Odawara. You just have a good card.
You probably still play Odawara, but yeah.
Well, yes, you absolutely. But the fact that you don't have to rely on, all right, well, maybe I'll.
I feel like it's like that's like one of the quickest Talion staples I've ever seen too. Right?
Oh, like, seriously, like slam fucking dunk. But
multi dupes is actually like the card I think more people have sent me when it got spoiled than any other card because of my Itali kick. there's a lot of people sending me pictures of multi duplication, like, you know it's coming. And I'm like, yeah, I know, guys.
I work with Wizards. I've seen this card.
It also like does something that the others don't do, is it can also copy an artifact, right?
Which is like nuts.
Yeah, we haven't explored that space, which is really cool. It can only hit things you control, right? But I think there's definitely a lot of room for this card. I think it's really powerful. I think, you know, there's a lot of decks that just want more of this effect, more dual caster synergies, more abilities to copy your commander, right? We talked about stuff earlier. You could even play this in your Bruce Tarl deck if you really wanted to cantrip it again. But, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
The fucking wild thing with this too, though, is like talk about what a get for Magda, right? Mm-hmm. Like what a huge get for Magda.
In what sense?
I mean, the fact that you can create copies of dwarfs that are also artifacts, so it lets it like
Oh, it makes artifact dwarves.
Because that's what I mean, is it's like a huge,
the artifact dwarves too.
Huge get for Magda.
Whoa, yeah, okay. Yeah. Big red get in general, like Atali, Magda, Godo, like, yeah, there's a lot of decks that are gonna be playing this card.
Yep.
Hey Wizards, keep making good red cards.
Maybe
a good arm to use in that ironic.
Maybe dial back from like dockside, but other than that, like,
yeah, you can make more of this.
No, please, no, please. I hate that card so much. But yeah,
since no, there are two wolves.
Honestly, no, this card is sick. I'm really excited about this card. And I think this is like, again, much like Harvester, is like straightforwardly playable. And I think that's like a huge thing, where we don't get many of those in CEDH, where we get like, oh, this is obviously like probably going to be in a fuck ton of decks. And like, I think this is one of those like, oh, this is probably going to be in a lot of decks. So, next card on our list is Pest Control. It is a white and a black sorcery that says destroy all non-land permanents with mana value one or less, and also has cycling for two generic.
I think this card is a trap.
Do you?
Yes. I think this card is a giant trap for CEDH. Okay. Because if you can tell me what CEDH deck plays this card,
well,
and that's, doesn't also get hurt by it,
that gets hosed. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that take at all. I do think it's not bad, right? Like it's obviously good, but I don't know where it fits. And I think I agree with you where I think trying to force it into stuff is a trap.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that.
Cause it's not like you can even like, hose a particular permanent type, right? Like it is all non-land permanents with mana value one or less, right? Like what is it? Like I can't even see like a Blood Pod style deck playing it, like maybe at
that. But my Viscera Seer.
Right, exactly. they're like, yeah, you're hitting your mana dorks, you're hitting the mana crypts, you're hitting the mana rock. Like like I don't know what do you want from your deck, but it is doing this thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just feels like a big old trap to me.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We might be wrong, but that's listen, the Sculpty boys have spoken, so you know that is the only
truth. We are here to sculpt your minds.
We're here to, no, remember, we're here to sculpt a winning mindset.
we're here to mind control you.
Next card on our list, it's our first spree card of the set review. I think it's our only spree card.
Which honestly, like, I will own up to this. There is a certain level of I have read all the cards in the set and many of them at the same time. There are probably spree cards in the set that I've missed. I'm gonna throw that out there.
I'll be honest, I read through every spree card and this is the only one that I was like, this is very straightforwardly playable. This was it. I don't know what to tell you. And it's Final Showdown. It only costs one CMC, but if you want to get any effects off of it, gotta cast the spree, pay for the spree cost, which the way spree works is it's effectively kicker.
So can you cast a thing without spreeing it at all? No, just choose one or more, but it says additional costs. I guess you have to, right?
I'm reading the notes right now. You must choose one or more modes you cast a spell spree, but no single mode can be chosen more than once.
Okay.
If you cast a spell with spree without paying its mana cost, you must still choose one or more modes and pay those additional costs. The mana cost is covered though, so at least you enjoy a nice discount, it says. But yeah, Final Showdown. It has spree and its different spree abilities is 4+1 generic. All creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. Has another +1 generic that is creatures. I moved my mouse. Choose a creature you control. It gains indestructible until end of turn and then plus 3 generic and 2 white, destroy all creatures. So straight up, this card is, in my opinion, I've talked a lot about Winds of Abandon on this channel. I think this I like more than Winds.
Whoa.
Simply because of the fact that it's an instant. And I think that is
your stuff, right?
Yeah, it hits your stuff, but you also have the other ability to it's more flexible than Winds of Abandon is. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what lifts it up, in my opinion. Because the Winds of Abandon is good specifically because of the fact that it exiles your opponent's stuff. But
right.
I think instant speed answers are significantly better, even if you lose stuff out of it. Then and also for one more mana, if you really want to keep something, you can keep something. Right.
Right.
So I like this more than Winds. But what are your thoughts on this card?
For me, the board wipe part of this card is not actually the part that I'm interested in.
Fair.
For me, it is the fact that white now has an answer for Oracle Consult at a very efficient rate. That's not just fucking Angel's Grace.
Fair.
Respectfully, Angel's Grace is just aha, I've got you, right? But this one actually answers a lot of combos.
Yeah.
A surprising amount of combos, right? Mid dock sideline, you can be man, that shit don't got text. Get out of here. you know what I mean? There's so many interesting interactions that this pulls up. You can stop Kinnons, you can stop this is the first answer in white that I think answers a lot of stuff at instant speed.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty definitively, right?
Stop, I mean, I think this is damn near close to Psycrift level, personally.
I see what you're saying with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because let it be, to be clear, if it was just the destroy part, I wouldn't be saying that. The fact that it is as flexible as it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is why I like this card so much. It is stupid flexible, and it also is if you're a Gnaws deck, fucking doesn't hurt your Gnaws curve at all. So it's just
that's actually pretty huge, huh?
Yeah, right? Fact that it's a one.
With Timna Jeska, I always found that one of the biggest pains in the butt for that deck was always okay, how do I deal with all of these Dax creatures? Cause they don't have very good efficient wipes. Right. But the idea that I can just be shut everything off.
End step board wipe. That's what I mean is the fact that it's an end step board wipe. I can go into my turn, do my thing. That's why I like this so much, because it's effectively a Psycrift almost.
Right.
I mean, that's what I like about this a lot. Obviously, it doesn't return everything. It just hits creatures. Mm-hmm. But I think it's I feel very comfortable being I would want Psycrift in Final Showdown in almost every deck I play.
Wow.
Well, I think it's real close to this.
I mean, every time I look at this card, I'm wow, Dress Down's just undervalued, huh? I think that card is kind of busto, and we've been sleeping on that one for a while. But this card is very strong. I really think it's one of the best things to happen to white. And I think as much as I kind of mentioned that some of the other cards we're going to be talking about were really good for the stacks decks, not just getting BTFO'd by a Thoracle or not just getting Bowmastered and blown out, right? A temporary humility is so much more impactful than people realize. Mm-hmm. And Dress Down's criminally underplayed, but imagine Dress Down in a deck where you kind of want to be able to do that kind of stuff for a long time, right? Biggest downside I see is if you're in a stacks deck and your opponent's oh, spell for turn, gotcha, right? It's okay, sometimes you're gonna hit a scenario where you turn off all your creatures, but that also shuts off your own rule of law or whatever. Right. You know, that's the worst part about it, right? But if you're dying, super don't care. You know what I mean? So
the funny thing is how both of us have latched onto different parts of this card. Mm-hmm. Because I also see in a scenario where somebody's starting to do a creature combo, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just okay, effectively overload this, right? And board wipe. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so fucking valuable.
Yeah, I mean, Sisse is one of the top performing decks in the format right now, right? Like, the ability to just be like, all right, enough out of you.
Fuck off. Yeah, I like this card a lot. I think, like, the three cards from this set that I am just, like, the most sold on is, like, this, Harvester, and Molten Duplication. I was just, like, are the three most obviously good CEDH near staples that I've seen.
In the 99.
Yeah. Moving on, we're now time for Cal's Arden section of the review.
Oh, Christ.
I'm not going to take up too much time with this. We got two new equipment. We actually got three, but I left one of them off. It's the white blue one, that like makes copies of shit, which is,
you don't like the sword.
No, I think I do like the sword, but I think it's just like so obvious.
Yeah. Generic.
Like, that it's just like obviously going in. I think there's like some discussion with these cards that I think is worth having. Lost Jitte is a one drop legendary artifact equipment that says whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, put a charge counter on Lost Jitte, and then you can remove a charge counter from it. Choose one untapped target land. Target creature can't block this turn, and put a +1/+1 counter on equipped creature. And has equipped one.
It's fucking crazy they printed this card,
it
right?
It is nuts that they printed this card.
It's in standard, isn't it?
This is going, no. This is going to modern, I believe. I don't know the big score is going into standard.
Is it?
Oh, okay. I think it's just modern, but I could be wrong.
That's upsetting that that's not something we know as full-time Magic people.
We should know that, but it's a little unclear in my opinion. But
yeah. No, I mean, that's from Wizards' perspective, not from ours.
Yeah. No, so where this is nuts, obviously it's an Arden card. I've seen some people ask me like where this fits in the like one drop, like it just, you play it. Like that's the answer. You play it in your Arden deck. Like there's no like weird like stuff. I think you play this and you play the Pip Boy, and they are
standard legal.
They are standard legal. That's fucking nuts.
There's a GK in standard. Okay. Yeah,
this card in modern is going to be a problem, though, in my opinion.
Yeah,
because of the fact that this is like ooh, great, another saga target. Cool. Hammer needed that. So this is this along with like Shadow Spear. Like, I think now, like going back to like CDH, I think now like Arden decks, you start looking at playing like Shadow Spear, because now you like almost become a like saga toolbox deck almost. Mm-hmm. And so you're wondering, because now there's just like such a large amount of like good one drop equipment you can go grab,
right?
Where you can just like for the moment go grab what you need. And so I think like, mm-hmm. we've kind of hit that critical mass. The other card that makes me, it really has me like I am probably playing Arden for a while because of these couple cards. Mm-hmm. And that's the Key to the Vault is the other card. This card makes me want to play Arden Silas specifically a lot. And that's because Key to the Vault is a generic and a blue legendary equipment that says whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, look at that many cards from the top of your library. You may exile a non-land card from among them, put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order, and you may cast the exiled card without paying its mana cost. You can play it not like either Arden Krom or Arden Silas. But
I was gonna say, it felt like this is better in the Krom one, right?
It might
like,
be better in the Krom one. I keep like flipping back before between the two of them, because like I really like the cleanness of the like Thoracle Consult win package, but also you just have so much more stuff in Jeskai.
Yeah, also just like looking at four cards compared to two generically, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously 5-man investment XYZ, we can go on forever about that, right? But like, yeah.
Well, I mean, technically 6 mana, because you're not really paying the equip cost ever in that deck, right? Like
I just literally 5 versus 3 being Krom's mana value versus
Silas's. Okay. So like I think it's a slam dunk for Arden decks like across the board. It's a shame you can't play this in Arden Tana. because that's where it'd be very good. Muy bueno. But we've gotten a lot of new stuff recently that has really kind of brought back my interest in Art and Crumb. I kind of fell off of it for a while because it just felt super stale. Because it was like you only had so many good equipment to choose from. And like you don't want to play Hammer because it like is such a big drawback. And so you don't want to do all those. But I think now you have enough options that like you can consider Hammer, I think, because you're not just relying on that one strategy. So I think there's a lot of stuff with it. I'm really excited to be testing some stuff.
I'm all about it. I really like that. The equipments have gotten like more interesting, right? They've definitely like done weirder stuff. I think the key to the vault is like very, very strong. Like I don't think anyone's doubting that. It like almost makes me want to like look into like Malcolm or like Essior, you know what I mean? Like just to get like really efficient versions of this stuff, right? But like with Arden specifically, to be clear. I think it's really fascinating. And I think like so let's talk to me about GTA versus Pip-Boy and where you kind of feel about that.
So I like both of them. I think they do like different things. And I think playing them, I think there's a couple like there's advantages to Pip-Boy that GTA doesn't have and vice versa. The big advantage of Pip-Boy is it's an attack trigger, right? It's not even you don't have to connect with that thing. And obviously GTA has the advantage of it doesn't give a shit if it's equipped or not. If it has charge counters, dope. So it's like there are those like obvious like things to me. And I think like from a like I think why I like being able to like pick is when you come into these situations where you are wanting, you know, something that gives you unblockable or something to pump or something to untap a lane, like any of these effects, right? You can pick the one that best suits the situation. So you have better situational options. Whereas before you were kind of like, this is the best I got. Now you have like a actual toolbox to pick from. And so I think that like, because for a long time I've talked about, right, how like Arden is like pseudo card advantage. In the fact that it lets you cheat things and it makes like equipment super efficient. And so like, I think the more we get good, like equipment, just as we make, just as good new creatures make Timna better, good new equipment make Arden better. And that's, it's kind of the same thing there, but, again, I don't want to take up too much time on Arden stuff. I know that only so many people are with it. But and I know it's not your favorite thing, but
still open to it.
it's really cool. I think there's like I'm excited. Over the last handful of sets, I've been more excited to play Arden than I have for in a while.
I definitely want to like if you ever go back to that Arden Vials Master List, I think that was your most fascinating Arden brew just because it was so weird, right? Like in a good way.
I want to go back to that one.
Like The Silas one I actually have thought about as well over the years. So
yeah. I mean it's really just a like even Arden Crumb, like I kind of want to reinvent Arden Crumb as just like a Godo, but it has you basically just play it like it's Godo, but then you get like counter spells, right? And that's kind of the way I've been like conceptualizing it in my brewing, and then you have just a bunch of like good toolboxy stuff around it.
To help get you there for sure.
Like I've considered taking out like the Underworld Breach package because it's been super clunky. And it just doesn't cleanly fit with like everything else the deck is doing. And where like the reason in like Loyal Retainers, it sucks that like I'm on it, but like it's just easy to like pull up a Godo with it. Because it's just you get that, you get Loyal Retainers, you get Savine's Wreck, and then and then you also have the Goblin Engineer lines now because it forged renewed, or what is it, the forge new, where you can get that Goblin Engineer, forge new, and then like whatever. And so it's just like the intuition package is like the strongest part of that bit. And is why I'm like so heavy on the Art and Crom side of it, because it's like the best win con access for the best win con the deck has access to, or like the commander has access to. And so that's kind of the way I've been looking at it. I've been actually trying to take cues from like Godo decks in general, and being like, what if we just added white and blue to Godo and then like kind of took that angle with it. And so, I'm gonna be on that. Doing a lot of brewing lately. So next card on our list is Esoteric Duplicator. It is a 2 generic and a blue artifact clue. It says whenever you sacrifice Esoteric Duplicator or another artifact, you may pay 2 generic. If you do at the beginning of the next end step, create a token that's a copy of that artifact. And then for 2 generic and sacrificing the duplicator, you can draw a card.
So worst case scenario, this is 4 mana every turn, draw a card.
Yes.
I didn't realize it could sack itself. That's kind of quirky.
Yes. It does also do some like weird shit with like KCI.
Kind of
Not super straightforwardly, but it does do some bizarre, like you can do some bizarre stuff with it.
I'm kind of underwhelmed by this card in general, but like it is interesting.
It's another one of those cards where it's like it has enough good text on it where I'm like, there's something, right? Like, I don't know what it is.
Oh, wait. This KCI Ugin's Nexus, right?
That's what it was. Is you just
you go to end step, sack Ugin's Nexus, pay the 2. Take an extra turn because Ugin's Nexus is not there, right? Goes to that next turn. You wait till the end step again. If you do it any sooner, you messed up the
loop. Correct, right? Because like, Ugin's Nexus stops the extra turn.
Right. So you have to do it on end step every time. It's weird.
It is weird. But that's what it was. I knew there was a thing that we had figured out with this in our group chat, and I couldn't remember what it was.
Yeah.
It was the Ugin's Nexus loop. Mm-hmm. So you can just take infinite turns with this in an Ugin's Nexus in KCI. I think even then,
and really any artifacts that guy,
yeah, like anything clear, that does that, and as long as you have 2 mana up,
yeah.
So like also like I guess Grinding Station technically does that, so you could like Grinding Station out your opponents,
which is also ironically enough like an outlet because you're like milling your opponents for 3 every time you do that. It's also kind of interesting if like your commander also helps with that, right? Yeah. So I don't know if there's any commander sack outlets that I can think of off the top of my head that would like encourage this particularly.
Arkham Dagson.
No, Arkham can only sack artifact creatures.
Oh, that's right. Damn.
I know.
I guess Oswald sacks, but it's white. You also can do shit with like Goblin Engineer too and Goblin Welder. Or like Goblin, those 2 things can sacrifice stuff. So again, lots of goofy, weird shit that you could do with this.
Weird little thing,
But I specifically like this and like Ugin's Nexus, I feel like is a package you can see somewhere. It's probably worth being aware of. And also like if what is it? Trouble in Pairs has proven anything. The fact like disrupting people's extra turns is at minimum good. So next up, God, I'm so excited about this card. This card is a card that I have been wanting Wizards to make for so fucking long. It's Tiny Boy.
Tiny Bones.
Tiny Boy. Tiny Bones joins up. It is a 1 black legendary enchantment that says when it enters the battle, I'm not even going to try to say the name again. When it enters the battlefield, any number of target players each discard a card. And it says whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, any number of target players each mill a card and lose 1 life. I'm so glad that we finally have a 1 mana, everybody discards a card in this.
We've had one already.
What card?
Vicious Rumors. And there's also an enchantment that does it too.
Oh, well, I'm glad that we have multiple now.
I'm also obsessed with these effects. So
I have wanted there to be, listen, I deeply want to play The Rock in CEDH. Mm-hmm. And every time a new one of these gets printed, I get that much closer to doing it.
Yeah. This one's also kind of weird because it's also like someone brought it up to me as like a CISA outlet, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, that's also a thing you can do with it, which is weird. Mm-hmm. It's a cool card. I don't know, like, it's not going to go in anything in particular, like, right away. Like, I do agree mm-hmm. with you. I think it's like definitely like anything that's legendary that Sissy can tutor up is immediately mm-hmm. like, yeah, you got to think about it to some extent. Right? Yeah,
I'm probably going to test it out. Cause like the question is like, do you play that? Do you play Oath of Nyssa? My sort of leaning towards this one is just like, there is a world where, you know, your opponent's down to one card in hand, they're the threat at the table, because, you know, whatever they tutored is like a win con or whatever, and you're like, cool, everybody snipe a card out the hand, and then like later on I'm doing Emil stuff and you're like, okay, right, I'm gonna flicker my commander infinitely, everybody take infinite mill and damage, right? So.
Yeah, I think that is cool too. I think the one that I do like that in that, like, mm-hmm. it cleans up some of the like Emil, mm-hmm. like some of those win lines from that yeah. perspective, because like maybe there's a
world, we already have where, like, a decent amount, but I do see what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that if you have this in like a way to flicker Sisse, right? Like, I think that mm-hmm. feels like on its face better than like a Nicol Bolas combo, right? Like, it's at least easier sure. to assemble.
Your inexperience in Sisse is showing, because that's already sort of like a major conversation with the deck itself.
Sure.
I could go on hour long rants about yeah. where that goes in Sisse, but like TLDR, it's a good card to test. The infinite flicker is already like a side strategy in the deck, right?
Right.
But it's less efficient than the Nicol Bolas lines due to mana efficiency. Is the TLDR there?
Interesting. Interesting.
But yeah.
Next card on our list is a card that I pretty sure everybody talked about immediately. It's High Noon. It is an enchantment that costs a generic and a white and says each player can't cast more than one spell each turn. It's rule law. Wait,
what's that text?
But the what makes this good or bad, depending on who you are, it has an activated ability that costs 4 generic and a red and sacrifice High Noon. It deals 5 damage to any target. So
that's the thing, and yes, that does make this card good, right? The other thing that quote makes this card good is that this is the cheapest pure rule of law we've ever had.
Yep. Right? It's very funny because it's like it's simultaneously like the best rule of law we've ever had and mm-hmm. also the worst, because of the fact that it's like here's why is you're color stuck.
You're stuck in Boros. Yeah. Okay.
And I think that's like the big downside of it, right? Is it's like it really limits your ability. So it's like it's not going into any green white decks. It's not going into any white black decks. It's not going into any.
It's like basically just Winota.
Right? Yeah. Like, it like goes into like maybe one, maybe two decks. And I think that's like why I don't love this card is mm-hmm. like I simultaneously love this card because of the activated ability and also hate this card because of the activated ability.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right. Right. Like, it's the ability to remove it when you need to, mm-hmm. or just like straight up kill a player when you need to is like, that will come up. It will.
Yeah.
As someone who's played a lot of stacks, like there are times when 5 to the face uncounterable is like, yep, that's it, that's what I need right now at this very moment. Yep, like I do need to murder you, good point. Like that is compelling argument. Very very relevant. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, like we're getting so freaking close. We're getting so close to you know, like someone literally asked me, what does Winota need to be playable again, and I was like, well, hypothetically we would need like 5 good cards for it, and you know, and now we have like a 2-mana rule of law and we have a counter spell on a bird, and mm-hmm. I'm like, is this real?
Feels like we're getting there.
Is the real timeline we're in? I'm okay with it. Like, you know, maybe we should go up to 4% win rate instead of 2, right? Like, let's go.
We'll be competing with Malcolm Timna for lowest win rate. Yeah, right. Next card on the list is Vraska Joins Up. It is a legendary enchantment that costs a black and a green and says whenever it enters the battlefield, put a death touch counter on each creature you control. And whenever a legendary creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. This card's so cool. What deck does this go in, Ian?
I don't know.
Feels like it would be a Sisse card, but
it feels like it could be a Sisse card. I have a lot of problems with it as a Sisse card.
I agree, but
yeah, like you're not trying to shove in Sisse. You want your mana untapped. You want your creatures back. Mm-hmm. Sisse having death touch is middling at best. I like the concept of it. I really do. I just don't think it's actually going to get there.
Yeah.
It feels very natural into Sisse, but like green, black is not colors you're trying to like jam pretty early. We love a good card draw. Don't get me wrong. But like going into combat with your legendaries is not a play pattern. Like there's a reason we don't play Timna. You know what right. I mean? Like it's very easy to play Timna and Sisse, right? It's two colors. It adds to your legendary count, right? Like, gives you card drop. We don't play it for a very good reason, right? And like this is much along that line, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I also think I do think there might be like I the reason I still think it's worth like noting is like I still think there's like Sisse so fucking flexible that I think there is a Sisse mm-hmm. build that could work with this, right? Because
yeah, like, yeah. I mean, literally. So my complaints about my experience with Sisse. Literally none of that fucking matters. People play the weirdest shit in Sisse and it works because it's like, ah, two mana legend. I don't know, man. Like,
Sisse, yeah. You know what? Here's a cool thing. You can tutor up Jace Reawakened and get it out earlier with Sisse.
Yeah, busted. can you do the Tybalt trick with Sisse? You can't do that, right?
The get out the backside of it? No.
Oh, because you have to cast, right? Yep.
Yeah, it's a cast thing.
Man,
yeah, that's
bullshit.
Trust me, if that was a thing you could do with Sisse, I'm pretty sure we would know by now.
Yeah, that's super fair. You always gotta ask the question.
Though. Yeah, listen, I'm just playing devil's advocate right now. Last card on our list is Kellen Joins Up. It is also a legendary enchantment that costs Bant. And when it enters the battlefield, you may exile a non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. And it also says whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Which is not bad. I don't know that it's good, but again, I don't know what. Listen,
I was very surprised you put this one and not Annie Joins Up. That's kind of crazy.
I didn't see Annie. We might talk about Annie Joins Up still. I don't know. I feel like most of these Joins Up cards were like worth talking about, mostly because of a like the fact that like there's just like so like Sisse's just so fucking flexible with what it can do that mm-hmm. like I can think of a world where this is just a fucking bomb. But it just like I just like it's worth noting. I like pointing it out to people. We will also just talk about Annie Joins Up.
I was gonna say Annie Joins Up feels like everything you're like kinda getting at with this one. Just like multiplied by 1,000.
Yeah. Like, Annie Joins Up costs a generic, a red, green, and white, and says when it enters the battlefield it deals 5 damage to target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls, and if a triggered ability of a legendary creature you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time. Which like what legends in Sisse that are generally played that have like good triggered abilities?
I mean like Derevi is the big one.
Okay, right? Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is like, you know, another Derevi on tap isn't the craziest thing in the world. Like Talion's not a bad one, right?
Because I didn't think about Talion, that.
You're just like, okay, cool, double Talion trigger this turn, right? Like, just people don't want to give you 2 cards to take 4, right? But for me, like, that part's, like, kind of incidental. The cool part is the uncounterable 5 damage that you can just sort of...
Like, the Roiling Vortex you got?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Roiling Vortex, is that the card I'm thinking of? The right card? Yeah. Okay.
So, like, I don't... I don't think it's like backbreaking. I don't even know if I'm going to test it in the list, but I think it's pretty interesting.
There's just a lot of cool new legendary stuff for Sisay, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this in Tiny Bones joins up are the most fascinating by a pretty hefty amount for that deck. But you know, the thing is to say, you can play a card like Nyambi, which was like a bulk rare from 1,000 years ago, and be like, but it helps the dark side lines, right? And it's just like, sure, man. Yeah, I believe you.
You got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, I've even been revisiting Weatherlight Consultation and like, like putting the like it's the my like my pitch on that is it's a whole lot like Clam Chowder. It just like goes, it like plays the consult line like a lot better or differently. So I mean, like I think
this is just in a damn good place, right? Like it was like one of the things that like it creamed everybody this weekend. You know, 4 blue farms made it into top 16, but also 3 Sisays made it. But the difference is
2 Sisays were in the finals.
Yeah, 2 of the 3 Sisays made the finals, right? And like there were several Sisays that just bubbled out too, right? Like. Turns out when you don't need to cast spells, you can start doing some crazy stuff when everyone's waiting for their Chroms and Rhystic Studies and Mystics to trigger, right? Yeah. Like, this is just a good deck.
I really, when I went through the stats from Punt City, I was like, man, no wonder Rog'Sai won that finals match. It was fucking Korvold, 2 Sisays, and a Rog'Sai. I'm like, yeah, no kidding, Rog'Sai won that pod.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's the most, that's like one of the dream scenarios, I feel like, for a Rog'Sai deck, because it's like, who the fuck is interacting with you at that table?
Not to take anything away from Tad, but
no, like a hell of a run. Like I'm not trying to take anything away from Tad. Like that's awesome. But when I saw, like at first I was like, hell yeah. Then I saw like the finals composition. I was like, oh, well, yeah. it's like,
yeah. Absolutely. No, it's a very friendly pod composition for Rog'Sai. I genuinely think like it was, it was a fascinating tournament in general for, you know, what the meta breakdown is and stuff like that. And we can definitely go in a little bit more detail about that at a later point too.
Yeah. Well, that's it for our set reviews. We broke this one up into two because we had a surprising number of shit to talk about with the set actually. Like this was like going into it I was like, oh, is there really that much? And then like we started going through everything and I'm like, think we might need to break this one up.
And like not everything we need to, like we have sets where we talk about a lot of shit and you can say like two words about it, right? Whereas this set I felt like everything was at least worthy of a healthy conversation, right? Like things like Stella Lee involve like real talk, like the Rakdos involve real talk,
even the Arden shit, right? Like it's just like everything in this, even the meaniest shit, right? Like the duplicator, right? With the Ugin's Nexus stuff.
Yeah.
Feel like it justified an actual discussion. Like,
absolutely.
Are you like fucking burning incense over there? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I have a candle going.
Okay. There's just for our audio only listeners, there's just like smoke coming up randomly.
Yeah. I blew up my candle. It's not a big deal.
Okay. You know, listen, I'm just making sure you're safe.
Listen, I have a candle. It smells very nice and it helps me sit here and not get distracted for hours on end.
Yeah. Well, Ian, you've talked a lot about, you know, over the time your coaching that you do, and you definitely didn't do a coaching spiel an hour ago. But you coach people, right? That's my tell people where folks can find you if they want coaching and want to support you as a creator. That was a seamless transition.
Yeah, zero problems with that. Hey everybody. Yeah, you can find me and my other content over at youtube.com/comedianmtg. Find my top tournament breakdowns as well as tournament reports for my deep runs at larger events. You can also find me and hire me for CEDH coaching. Had a number of clients do really well recently. I've got some really cool stuff that I'm working on for like narrowing things down for coaching, getting things explained a little bit better, doing some really cool new stuff where I'm experimenting with different types of coaching. At the end of the day, I really care about this game and this community. And if I can do stuff to help people learn and grow and get better and improve those skills, I'm going to keep doing that. And you know, helps keep the lights on and all that stuff. So
yeah,
if you're curious about that stuff, meetingmtg@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, Discord. Cal has all those things in the description below, and they're lovely enough to do that.
Yeah. Check out our description. Check out our link tree. All that stuff is down in there. Also, if you want to support the Mind Sculptors and you want to continue to see our podcast and some other little projects I've got in the works, you can head on over to patreon.com/themindsculptors to get so help support us. Also, I mean, even just a like and a comment for engagement, anything like that, it helps. It goes a long way. We really appreciate everybody who follows and supports. I know, like, I know that I, like, on this channel have the persona of, like, being a little bit, like, smug, but, like, I really do genuinely appreciate everybody and, like, love the community. And, like, I want to hammer home the fact that, like, that is very much me, like, playing a part, right? Like, I love this community. I love getting to do this. Just like the fact that this is a reasonable thing for me to spend my time on is amazing. And the fact it went from like a passion project of just like, I need something to do during the pandemic to like what I do is a dream come true. So I want to underscore how much I appreciate everybody. But with that being said, we'll be back next week. I don't know what we're going to do in that time, but we're going to bring something to you. So with that being said, those are the Mind Sculptors. Stay sculpted, sculpty boys.
It's sculpin' time.